felt intrusive searching of her face.
Why is it that you've come here, Arati?
There was an edge to his voice.
You want me to kill the great beast?
Her breath caught. Arati, not princess, no formal title, only familiarity which they hadn't yet earned. Still, it warmed her to her core. She stammered,
Of course I want the beast to be killed.
Paxton walked slowly to the small table, examining the cup. He turned his head enough to gaze warmly at her through strands of his hair.
But do you want me to be the one to kill it? Is that why you're here? To persuade me?
His words were spoken in a low voice, sending Arity's thoughts into a whirlpool of confusion.
No, I mean, I...
She tried to sort out any hidden meaning in his words, but he was difficult to read. If he killed the beast, she would get to touch him, run her hands over him. He might not like Arity for whatever reason, but from the heat in his gaze, she knew he'd welcome her hands on him. He'd probably welcome any lass's hands on him. That thought darkened Arity's musings. He half smiled.
What is it, Harrison, you want? Do you still think you have a say in who marries you? He asked. Even after your father's proclamation.
And with that, Arity felt her wits returning as she returned his steely stare. Did he think she was some girl to be toyed with? How dare he make light of her situation?
If you're looking to have your ego stroked, Paxton Seabolt, you've asked the wrong lass. I would prefer my future husband to love me, if you must know. This arrangement does not please me. But the safety of the kingdom is more important than what I wish for. So don't speak lightly of my circumstances.
And why had he mentioned Harrison? Had that been a twinge of jealousy in his voice? His eyes roamed her face as if searching for cracks in her words. He appeared unapologetic for any disrespect he might have meant. Arity could not understand this bold man, or how he perceived her.
As they stared, Arity felt a sudden nudge at her back from the opening door.
The princess jumped and saw Mrs. Rathbrook. Paxton stood straight. Arity's cheeks heated and she pressed a hand to her chest. This must have looked bad. But the woman smiled at them both with apparent delight.
My apologies, Mrs. Rathbrook, Arity said. I heard Mr. Seabolt was injured, so I came to check on him. But he's already in perfect condition, thanks to you. I was just leaving.
Mrs. Rathbrook reached out and took Arity's clammy hand, squeezing it as if to calm her. In the woman's other hand was a man's tunic. Paxton looked back and forth between the woman and girl, seeming almost confused or surprised about something. The older woman tossed the shirt at his face and he caught it.
It's not proper to go around shirtless in front of a royal lass, she gently admonished. No matter how beautiful she might be.
She winked at Arity, who blushed all over again.
Please don't tell my father or mother, Arity began.
But the woman only chuckled and shook her head.
There is nothing to tell. Two people talking.
Arity, beyond thankful, embraced the woman and kissed her cheek. She felt Paxton watching her with a keen awareness, but she refused to acknowledge him or say goodbye. She peered around the door and slipped into the empty infirmary hall, gulping breaths of cool air. Her hands shook and she curled her fingers into tight fists to fight the trembling. She didn't doubt that Paxton had felt her attraction. It's surely what gave him the confidence to be as forward as he pleased. But she couldn't allow another moment like that to happen between them. In his eyes lived something deep, dark, and untold. Something that frightened her. But it didn't scare her enough to make her want to stay away from him. Not nearly enough.
Chapter 19
Lady Wyneth stood at the gates of the West Commons, peering through at the quiet hunters milling about. Most of them appeared to be finishing their morning meals and heading toward the tents for rest. No sign of her cousin anywhere. Wyneth turned and strode along the cobblestones back to the castle. She wondered where Arity could be. She'd caught wind of the night's events from two castle maids, and wondered if the princess had heard about Paxton Seabolt's injury. As the lady rounded the corner, she heard low male voices, and nearly crashed into several men.
Whoa there!
Harrison took her by the forearms to steady her, chuckling. The other men walked around them, except Lord Elvy, who stopped.
So sorry, Lieutenant. I was looking for Arity.
Haven't seen her. We've just returned from scouting for signs of the beast. No luck.
Wyneth nodded. She hoped with all her heart that Harrison would kill the thing to avenge Brecken and marry her cousin. She'd always wanted him and Arity together, though the princess seemed to have taken an interest in the daring skirt raiser, Paxton. She supposed she couldn't fault her, though Harrison would be the safer bet. Harrison watched her with fondness in his light brown eyes.
I'd better go wash up.
Good to see you, Lieutenant, she said. Harrison began to leave her, but Lord Alvy remained. When Harrison stopped, the Ascomanian lord waved him on with a smile.
I'll be along momentarily.
Harrison's face hardened, and he made no move to exit. He looked to Wyneth, who felt unease at the awkwardness. Wanting to defuse the tension, she said, It's fine, Lieutenant. I shall see you this afternoon. He hesitated, looking displeased before he finally strode away.
Walk with me.
Lord Alvy held out his elbow, and Wyneth took it, letting him lead her off the path and into a nearby grassy area with a smattering of trees.
How are you this morning, lady?
His voice was as low as the deep blue sea. Wyneth swallowed hard. Something about this man was disarming. He made her incredibly nervous. His attention was flattering, but Wyneth did not take it to heart. They stopped behind a wide tree, and he turned to face her. His dominating presence was flustering. I'm well, Wyneth said. Her eyes darted this way and that, attempting not to look into the cool arctic blue of his. How goes the hunt? He peered out at the glistening ocean beyond.
The beast still eludes us in the day. They watched it enter the water, but we can't find where it might have come back out.
Wyneth clutched the gray fabric at her chest. The beast took to the water. Sudden fear gripped her like fingers of icicles, and she felt dizzy. Leif moved closer, took both of her elbows.
You look faint.
I'm all right, she whispered. He slowly let her go. She blinked, eyes burning. She hadn't cried in 2 whole days, but hearing that the beast could swim, that it could have followed her into the creek that night. Wyneth covered her mouth, breathing deeply through her nose as she closed her eyes. How easily she could have been killed, just like Brecken. Brecken. Lady Wyneth was hardly aware as Lord Alvy led her father into a shroud of evergreens out of sight. He took her face in his hands and swiped the tears as they fell. His face was a mixture of confusion and alarm. High seas. She was crying in front of a hunter, a stranger, a foreign lord.
I'm sorry.
Wyneth stepped back out of his grasp, and his bare arms fell to his sides. She had no idea why she felt the sudden urge to tell him everything. Perhaps his kindness, perhaps to kill his interest in her. What man would find interest in a woman with a shattered heart?
The beast killed my betrothed.
Her voice was thick. She wiped the last bit of moisture from her eyes and stood taller.
I saw it attack. We were together on the docks. I fled, swimming across the creek. I left him.
Leif's handsome face slackened.
That was you. You were engaged to the captain.
No more tears. Wyneth tightened her jaw and nodded. Understanding crossed his face.
So, you've seen the beast.
A flash of teeth and claws and blood flashed through Wyneth's mind's eye, and she rocked back on her heels.
Of course.
He moved toward her and she stepped back, causing him to tilt his head to the side.
I can't begin to imagine what you've been through.
She swallowed.
Why didn't it come for me in the water? It could have killed us both.
There were times, especially during the first couple weeks, when she wished she were dead too. She thought death might have been better than to feel the heartache anew each morn when she woke. Brecken had been her life and her future. He'd been there as her mindset changed from that of a girl to a woman. And he'd loved her every minute, patiently.
There are many things we don't understand about the beast and its motives, Leif said quietly. But the fates kept you alive for a reason. You have a life to live still, Lady Wyneth.
Wyneth allowed herself to look at him. Brecken had been polished, lean. His hair had been short, and he was polite to a fault. Lord Leif Alvy was a contrast to all of that. A rogue. Wild waves of blonde hair rested on his shoulders. a vest of fur fitted against his massive chest, his shoulders and arms of muscle jutting out. It felt wrong, wrong to look upon another man this way, especially a man who was in the running for her cousin's hand in marriage. Surely she was losing her mind.
I must go.
In a move like a dance, Wyneth turned away, only to feel the warmth of his grip around her wrist, spinning her back around, pulling her with a silent command right into that solid chest and those strong arms she'd just been admiring. Without a single word, Lord Alvy took Wyneth's mouth with his own, practically lifting her off her feet as his hands circled her waist and tugged her body against his. She heard herself make a noise of surprise, which morphed into a moan at the closeness and warmth, the scent of clean masculinity. For a long moment she shut off her mind, letting her senses have full control. Leif's hunger for her lips was like nothing she'd ever felt. He was not careful, nor did he bother with niceties as she was accustomed to. He took complete ownership, crushing her body to his in a way that made her long for more. All at once, the two names closest to her heart were shouted inside her mind. Brecken! Arity! Lady Wyneth pushed against his wide chest, and he let her go. She struggled for air. He wiped the corner of his mouth with his thumb and smiled.
You, we can never do that again, Wyneth said.
Her voice was a shaky jumble of want and need and regret.
Why not?
His head cocked in that curious way again.
Why not?
She repeated back at him in disbelief.
I've wanted to do that since I first laid eyes on you.
Wyneth's blood raced at the flattery of hearing that from a man like him, but it wasn't as simple as he was making it out to be.
I only just finished telling you I've lost the man I was to marry. My heart still aches.
He appeared crestfallen.
I'm sorry, Lady Wyneth. I thought it might help.
Oh, the logic of a man, Wyneth thought.
What's more, Lord Alvy, if you kill the beast, you'll be granted the hand of my cousin, my best friend.
Wyneth was still in shock that he'd kissed her, this man she scarcely knew, and that she'd been so completely willing. Being so near him, she felt the lingering lust burning under her skin and the churn of guilt in her gut. It was the worst kind of situation. Couldn't he see that? Apparently not, based on his easy smile.
Life is for living, Lady Wyneth. You needn't feel guilty or worried. Fate will intervene to make things right, when necessary. I hope to see you this evening before the hunt.
He brought a massive hand to her hair and let his palm and fingers stroke a lone curl. Her chest was still heaving as he walked away. Blasted fate, outlandish notions. Wyneth grasped her grey skirts and marched back to the castle through crunching leaves and dry pine needles, overrun by a maelstrom of thoughts. She was quite certain that kissing one of her cousin's suitors mere months after the death of her fiancé was not fate. It was simply one man acting on an inappropriate urge. She was ashamed that her first reaction had been to welcome his touch instead of thwarting it. She felt utterly alone. Wyneth could never tell Arity. She could never tell anyone. As she burst into the castle, a gust of wind at her back, she could still feel Lord Leif Alvy's firm lips against hers. She avoided the eyes of the guards as she passed, bringing a hand to her mouth to hold on to the feel of Leif's kiss for a moment longer. Just a moment more, and then she'd put him from her mind. Chapter 20. After her studies, Arity donned her leotard and a soft pullover tunic. Another day had passed, and the beast was still at large. The only good thing to happen was that the king was feeling a bit more comfortable about letting his children out of the castle during daylight, to places other than just the commons. The hunter's presence seemed to make everyone feel safer. The beast had never attacked or been seen during the day, and it hadn't set foot on royal land since the night it took Brecken's life. At least not that they knew. Vixie had sprinted from the doors toward the stables, her guards racing to keep up. Donabin and several of their young cousins were accompanied by maids and guards down to the royal beach, where they could dig for sand crabs and enjoy the autumn sun a bit, before winter began to show its face. Flanked by several guards, Arity headed the back way to the side of the castle, avoiding the entrance of the commons. The giant oak tree loomed, awaiting her company, with magenta silks hanging from a high, thick branch. The guards kept their distance, making a square around the tree. She hardly registered their quiet presence anymore. She gave the silks a tug to be sure everything was sturdy, before taking off her tunic and dropping it to the ground. This was Arity's favorite silk. Rather than two separate strands, this one was connected, making a U at the bottom like a hammock. Arity held the silks up high and lifted her knees, sliding her pointed feet through the gap, feeling the burn of her abdominal muscles. She hung upside down a moment by her knees, letting the tips of her hair drag along the ground, twisting side to side to warm up and stretch. Then she lifted herself until she was sitting in the silks, like a swing. A breeze blew, and Arity looked up at the rays of sunshine shooting through the canopy of yellow and orange leaves. In that moment, there seemed to be peace in the land. But an ache deep in Arity's gut reminded her that all was not well. That all might never be truly well for her again, even after this monster was killed. She pulled herself to standing, the silks pressing into the bare arches of her feet. Then she let her body take over in a series of climbs and wraps, twisting and stretching, leaning her body in unnatural ways that pushed her flexibility to the limits. She split her legs and struck an upside-down pose where she hung by her hips, her whole body tight to keep balanced. With a twist of her waist, she spun, her arms and legs out, hair flying. Nearby cheers sounded, causing Arity's core to momentarily loosen and make her wobble. She reached up and pulled herself quickly to sitting, turning her head to see her audience. Nearly all the hunters had climbed the side wall where the wooden risers were and were sitting on top of the stones, watching her. She became acutely aware of her tight leggings and leotard.
"Don't stop on account of us, princess,"
Tyrn yelled. Her face flushed as men of all nationalities smiled up at her, clapping. The Zandali women cupped their hands around their mouths and let out keening sounds. She gave them all a small wave, feeling exposed. Then Arity's eyes caught the still form of Paxton on the end beside Tyrn. He leaned his elbows on his knees, watching her with his unreadable stare. Those dark eyes made her feel more than exposed. She felt naked. Despite their protests, Arity slid down from the silks and grabbed her tunic. She walked quickly toward the castle, giving a polite smile in their general direction, before she disappeared.
"Deep sea, she's something, isn't she?" Tyrn raved. "Did you see her, Pax? And when she walked off, all bashful-like. Adorable. Did you see?"
"I have got eyes, don't I?"
Paxton had seen all right, and he'd heard every word the bloody Ascomanians had muttered in lewd laughter out of earshot of the guards. He thought there'd be a fight between Harrison and one of the men when the lieutenant told him to shut his mouth, but Leif had defused the situation, making them all laugh with a story about a Coldlands woman who dumped her ale over the man's head when he'd commented on her bottom. Paxton didn't move a muscle, even after the other hunters climbed down and went about their business. The Zandali three jumped from their high perches into the field with the oak tree, landing in impressive crouches. He stared absently as they took turns on that fabric thing. Judging by the way they struggled and grunted, it must have been harder than it looked. Arity had made it look easy. He thought about that morning in the infirmary, the way she'd hugged Mrs. Rathbrook and kissed the woman's cheek. It was one thing to be polite to a lashed, which few were. But to show that level of affection, it had taken him completely by surprise. Arity was the future of this kingdom. She'd someday be queen. She could change these lands for the better. Was there hope to be had after all? Paxton gave his head a shake. He turned and hung his feet over, facing the commons area, and dropped to the rows of seating below. Lord Leif Alvey was waiting for him at the bottom. They clasped hands when Paxton reached him.
"Quite the prize, is she not?"
the cold landlord said, nodding in the direction of the tree on the other side of the wall. Paxton shrugged, sort of wanting to silence Leif with a punch to the throat at that moment.
"If you fancy the circus life."
Lord Leif Alvey gave a loud laugh.
"If only marriage were as entertaining as a circus. But at least that one would bring a bit of fire to the arrangement. Not all royal lassies are so interesting."
Paxton said nothing, unsure if Leif was baiting him for his stance on royals. He sometimes forgot the hunter was royalty in Ascomani.
"Your man Harrison, though. He's got a history with the princess, aye?"
Paxton shrugged.
They know each other. Friends, supposedly.
Leif's eyebrows went up and down, and he chuckled.
The lad's in love, I'd say. This hunt's a dual purpose for him. Vengeance and love.
This turned Paxton's stomach for some reason, and he found himself saying,
I believe there is only friendship between them.
At this, Leif laughed and slapped Paxton's arm.
He's after her hand, just like you and I. I don't fancy the idea of marriage, Paxton stated. I probably wouldn't either if it wasn't expected of me.
Paxton supposed each man and woman had their struggles to overcome, but he was glad not to be a royal with all the ridiculous things expected of them.
I dare say you will fancy the idea of marriage a bit more if you kill the beast and earn a plump bed inside that castle.
Leif elbowed Paxton in the upper ribs, making him grunt. Paxton grumbled, and the Ascomanian lord chuckled, walking away. Chapter 21. The next morning, after the night's silent hunt and silent breakfast, Paxton and Tian sat with the other hunters around the fire pit to discuss. Though it was daylight, the fire was good for keeping them warm against gusts coming up from the sea. The Zandali were the last to join, one of the women shamelessly rubbing her hip against the back of Tian's head as she passed. His mouth froze mid-sentence. Samuel and Harrison choked back their laughter.
I agree, Tian, Leif said from across the fire,
not having seen.
It seems to set out at random. There's no pattern to where it chooses.
Yes, said the Calorian man, who seemed to have a leadership role among his men,
and one of the few who spoke Yeronin. His hair was shaved along the sides, a strip of black slicked down the middle.
This is like no animal I have hunted. I cannot predict.
Paxton and the others nodded.
Auda,
Zandora said in a low voice from where she sat behind him. Paxton nodded. He recognized the Zorfinan word for water. A hissing sound was made from across the fire. Paxton was surprised to see the Zorfinan men staring at the Zandali with contempt. When Zandora made a gesture with her fingers, they all looked away.
Why do you think they hate each other? Tian asked Paxton.
They say our tribe is cursed,
Zandora murmured from behind them.
They are fools.
Paxton, Tian, Samuel, and Harrison all swung their heads around.
You speak Yeronin, Tian said.
Zandora gave a shrug.
When it suits me.
Her accent was strong.
Why am I not surprised?
Samuel chuckled, shaking his curly head. The three Zandali looked smug in their black headscarves, wrapped securely around their dark faces and necks. They each sat on the grass lazily, two leaning back, Zandora in the center with an elbow on her raised knee.
My sisters speak only Zorfinan.
They're your sisters?
Tyr nodded to the other girls.
Yes, I am the oldest. Some call me queen of our tribe.
So the girl you lost,
Paxton said respectfully.
She was your sister also.
Zandora kissed her fingers and touched her shoulder in some kind of tribal sign.
Yes, our youngest. She brings our tribe much pride with her bravery.
The men nodded. After a quiet moment, Tian asked,
What is the story with you and them then?
He nodded across the fire to the other Zorfinan hunters.
I mean, if it suits you to tell me.
Zandora threw back her head and gave a rich laugh.
I like you, Tiern Seabolt. My sisters enjoy you even more.
Tiern rubbed his neck and gave a nervous laugh as the sisters watched him like prowling cats.
Thanks.
Why do they think you're cursed? Harrison asked. Because women rule your tribe?
No. It is because the Zandali allow magic. We do not give census keepers permission to enter our lands. If they try, we kill them.
Paxton's heart thrummed erratically. The other men raised their brows. Samuel said,
You mean you allow your lush to work freely?
She gave him a fierce look.
Is that a problem for you?
No.
Samuel raised his hands.
I have no problem with the lush.
Paxton tried to keep his voice steady.
I didn't know there was any place in Yerona where it wasn't outlawed.
To this she shrugged.
Zandali do not care for laws of Yerona or Zofina. We make our own. In this way, our people flourish.
The men nodded, eyebrows still raised. None of them dared say anything against this.
Do you have children of your own then? Tian asked.
This brought a smile to Zandora's face.
A son and daughter for me.
A son for my sister. She motioned to the older of the two, then the younger.
This one married just this summer.
So many children.
Samuel's words trailed off and his eyes glazed as he stared off. A clang echoed from the commons gates, and they turned their heads toward the sound of running. A military commander from the castle burst through the tents to the fire pit, out of breath. Paxton jumped up with the other hunters to hear the news. The man's forehead was creased in remorse.
A fishing village in the north was attacked during the night. Doors ripped from the hinges. Men were devoured while their wives and children watched helplessly.
He stopped, swallowing. Curses. It was breaking into homes. Why couldn't the beast have shown itself where any hunters had been, instead of a helpless village? The hunters shared horrified expressions.
Perhaps we can station hunters in the sea towns with horns, so they can alert us if the beast comes, said Samuel.
Paxton shook his head.
We don't have the numbers for that, but we can send word to towns to have their own men with horns at the ready. Each town could come up with their own system of alert, stationing their people at different intervals, maybe in trees. But there are curfews throughout the kingdom, the officer said. Blast the curfews, Paxton shouted.
He closed his eyes to calm himself. Harrison stepped forward.
With all due respect, sir, if people are willing to help, I think they should be allowed.
The officer set his jaw.
I will speak with the king's commanders. If they agree, we'll send mounted messengers to towns to set the plan in motion.
The hunters nodded, and the officer left them to prepare for that night's hunt. They hunkered over the maps.
Our greatest success was the night we were all close enough to hear one another's calls, Paxton reminded them. If they approve the horns, we can afford to spread a bit farther, but it'll be at least 2 days until we know.
He ran his finger along a length of the waterway.
But the beast has moved north,
Volgan argued, pointing closer to the ridgelands.
That's the last place it attacked, Harrison said. But the beast has attacked many places with no rhyme or reason, always along the waterways. Then you can stay down there by the creeks, and we'll follow the beast north along your own river,
Volgan argued, chest puffed.
It's a swift swimmer, and it knows it's being hunted, Lord Alvi told them. I say each group takes one of the major waterway veins, North Creek, South Creek, your own river, even up around the bay. My men and I will take mid-river. We'll be too spread out to help one another, but if we have no luck, we'll go back to grouping closer again tomorrow night. Agreed.
Paxton gritted his teeth in annoyance. He knew Leif was trying to appease his men, but Paxton wanted to stick to a plan where he felt their odds of killing the beast were much better. He was sick of wasting time and lives for the sake of stroking the pride of a few. After another silent night of hunting, the Zandali were irritable on their return to royal lands at daybreak. They kept snapping at one another in Zorfinan, and the men moved further away, steering clear. Samuel suggested cutting through the nearby town to get them back quicker. Families filtered out of their homes, women sweeping their steps, men off to work. The Zandali watched the women with interest. Their few children approached with caution, curious, watched closely by their mothers.
How goes the hunt?
One woman called, a hand on her hip. Harrison shook his head.
No sign of it last night. We'll get it though, miss. Soon.
The woman, probably his mother's age, stepped into the street and kissed Harrison's cheek. She beamed grateful smiles at the other Lachlan men, and then stared openly at the huntresses.
These are the Zandali, Tiern explained. They've joined the hunt.
The Lachlan woman's mouth dropped open. A crowd began to form around them.
You mean the real Zandali?
Tiern nodded. Whispers about the foreign huntresses spread all around them, faces lighting up with excitement, people shuffling and standing on their tiptoes to see. The Zandali took it all in stride, looking around at the pale faces, but not smiling. One brave Lachlan woman stepped forward and took the hand of Zandora,
who stood in front. She patted her hand, beaming.
Thank you.
Zandora stared down at her, and Tian laughed nervously, stepping up.
They are women of few words.
A toddler scrambled down from his mother's arms and went to Zandora's legs, touching the strange material.
Grayson, no!
The mother rushed forward, stopping when she saw Zandora give the child a smile, her earlier irritation seeming to vanish. His mother relaxed but remained close. When Zandora patted his head, the town's few children rushed at the Zandali, wanting to touch their clothes. The presence of the children seemed to cheer the huntresses, who were glad to squat down and let the little ones touch them. After a few minutes, Harrison called out to the people.
Thank you for your kindness, but we must be getting back.
The Zandali were in far better moods after that. They all were, until they reached the commons. A set of military men was leaving, their faces grim. The Askamanians and Zorfinans stood in separate groups, talking, but they came together when they saw the Lachlans and Zandali approach. Leif spoke.
The beast attacked the Calorians. They were all found dead. Curses.
Samuel rubbed his face. Paxton's jaw flexed as he ground his teeth in anger. Having fought the beast alongside those men, it made him furious to know they hadn't had backup. He wanted to keep his composure, but his jaw was so tense he could only speak through gritted teeth.
This was avoidable. We should have hunted closer together.
Vulcan's lip rose in a sneer. Paxton turned on his heels for the tents, afraid of what he'd do and say if he remained a moment longer. He collapsed onto his cot in the small tent, pressing his fingers to his temples. Tian came in behind him, but knew not to bother him when he got like this. After a few minutes, Tian mumbled, "Bloody seas," and fell asleep. A steady rain began. As the day went on, the rain progressed into a thundering storm, which settled into more rain. The land turned to mud. Accounts of flooding waterways came to them from castle messengers in high boots. Even the path outside the commons area had been covered over by a stream of mud. With regret, they decided to call off the hunt for that night. Since water had seeped under the tents, High Hall was turned into the hunters' quarters. The men sat around playing cards and drinking tankards of ale. The Zandali had been allowed guest quarters of their own. They had looked exhausted when Paxton saw them trudge away. Paxton knew he should take the opportunity to relax, but he was too frustrated about the prior night's losses and tonight's hunt being called off for weather. He turned his back to the others and lay on his cot in silence, wondering how close Arity's chambers were to the hall, wondering what she was thinking and doing within those same walls that very moment. Chapter 22 Lady Wyneth was so lost in her drawing that she didn't register people in the library until they stood before her. She looked up into the grinning face of Lord Leif Alvey and quickly closed her sketchbook. He was with two guards and two other Askamanian men, who brought with them scents of damp fur.
"Hello, my lady," Lord Alvey said.
Hello, Wyneth said, was murky with creativity, lines still moving about in her mind, begging to be drawn. She pulled her feet out from under herself, smoothing down her grey skirts. Sounds came back to her now, muffled rain against the tall windows.
"We're giving a tour of the castle, Lady Wyneth," a guard said. "Sorry to disturb you."
She shook her head and forced a polite smile, feeling Lord Alvey's warm gaze on her all the while. "No problem at all."
"So, this is the Royal Library."
The guard motioned his hand around at shelves stretching to the high ceilings, and cozy nooks with leather chairs and woven rugs. The other Askamanians grunted, making a quick scan, looking bored.
"Where is the indoor archery range?"
the hairiest man asked.
"Down this hall, past the stairs."
The men set to leave, looking back at Lord Alvey.
"Go ahead without me. I wish to see the ancient texts."
The larger, hairier man from the Coldlands lifted an eyebrow high, and then shrugged before leaving. Wyneth's insides bounced and spun as Lord Alvey's presence surrounded her. She moved her eyes slowly up to him as he turned toward her sketchbook.
"What were you working on?"
Lady Wyneth placed her palms on the cover. "Honestly, nothing of interest. I make drawings for my siblings and cousins, to entertain them." He grinned and sat in the chair beside her, pulling it closer. Great seas, he was large, and he didn't smell musty like the other men. He smelled almost salty.
I would love to see.
Wyneth felt her face warming. No, really, Lord Alvi.
Please, call me Leif, and let me see your sketches.
Oh, fine. What did it matter what he thought? She handed the book over, her heart beating too fast. He opened it, giving his full attention to the drawings.
Crockett's race, he murmured. And Crockett is a crocodile.
Mm-hmm. You see, Prince Donovan is a bit competitive, Wyneth explained. He likes to cheat and pouts if he doesn't win. So Princess Erti and I came up with a story about a crocodile that cheated so much in his river races that the other crocs no longer wanted to play with him. Lord Alvi flipped through all the pages and chuckled at the end.
Remarkable.
Wyneth went hot, resisting the urge to fan herself as she watched his strong hand skimming across her drawings. Then he plucked her pencil from the binding pouch and did something that shocked her. He began to sketch, the pencil scratching with ease in his oversized hand. Wyneth giggled as the form of a bird began to take shape on Crockett's shoulder. Lord Alvi spoke low.
Each time the little croc tries to cheat, the bird gives him a peck, like his conscience.
That's quite good. Wyneth had never seen a man draw so well.
Let's keep this our secret, aye.
He set down the pencil and gave her a bashful grin, softening her all over.
My lady.
He reached for her hand, but she swiftly pulled it to her lap. She could not allow a repeat of their last encounter, even though she thought of it often enough. Too often. My lord, she said. We cannot. Their eyes met, filling her with pain and longing that she couldn't comprehend.
Lord Alvi,
called a deep voice from the doorway, echoing. Wyneth jumped, and Lord Alvi wrenched his head around.
Care to visit the indoor range with us?
The Askamanian lord gave him a nod.
Aye.
Before he could say another word, Wyneth reached over and took the sketchbook from his hand, standing. Good evening to you all. She nodded at the men, avoiding Lord Alvi's eyes, rushing from the library. Emotions welled inside her. She wanted to get to her chambers before she exploded. As she turned the corner, she ran smack into somebody.
Lady Wyneth.
Harrison gave her a friendly grin.
How nice to see you.
Her throat constricted and her eyes burned. Harrison's eyes narrowed.
What's wrong?
Seas. He reminded her so much of Brecken. Polished, handsome, polite. Even their bodies were of similar stature. The lean muscles and tapered waists. I don't feel well. Laughter from the Askamanians sounded from down the hall as the men headed toward the archery room. Harrison narrowed his eyes at the sound.
Did Leif do something to you?
Harrison took her by the shoulders.
Did he touch you?
When she didn't answer fast enough, he said,
Tell me.
No, Harrison, she said in a rush. He stared deep into her eyes until he seemed assured she was telling the truth. Then he took a deep breath and removed his hands.
I'm sorry. I don't like the way he pursues you. It's disrespectful to you and Arity, to Brecken. Keep your distance from him, Wyn. I saw.
What? Her eyes snapped up.
I shouldn't have spied, but I had a feeling his motives were not honorable when he asked you to walk with him. I saw him kiss you in the trees. You were right to run from him.
Wyneth swallowed, her stomach churning with shame.
I have to go.
She rushed past him, covering her mouth, trying to keep it all inside long enough to burst through her chamber doors and shut them tight behind her. Wyneth paced a minute, and then sat in a cushioned chair, breathing hard. She opened her sketchbook and ran a slender fingertip across the animated bird on the crocodile's shoulder. A dry sob choked her as she slammed the book shut and closed her eyes. Tears burned inside her eyelids, and an irrational bout of resentment bubbled up from deep inside her.
Why, Brecken? She whispered. Why did you have to be so bloody brave?
The sketchbook slid to the floor with a clatter as Wyneth bent, her elbows on her knees and her face in her hands. Her shame was like a living, growing thing inside her. If only Brecken had dived into the water with her, they might have escaped together. What had he been trying to prove by fighting that monster? Why did he have to go and get himself killed? If he were here, none of this would be happening with Lord Alvi. She knew that for a fact. If Brecken were here, her heart would have never wandered to one of Erity's suitors.
Brecken, you stupid, stupid man, why?
Winnis railed in absolute anger, an emotion she hadn't allowed herself to release until that moment. She let herself be overcome with rage at the unfairness of it all. She screamed, and when her maid opened the door, peeking in with worry, Winnis threw a pillow at the door and shouted, "Leave me alone!" She then began to throw everything inside, breaking a canvas against the wall. Looking down at the drab gray gown, she grasped the neckline and yanked until it tore at the seams. She screamed at the top of her lungs, kicking her bedpost until her feet throbbed, punching her mattress until her hands stung.
"How much longer, Breck?"
Winnith sobbed, her face against the bed.
"How much longer will it hurt like this?"
She clenched the sheets. Winnith wept until her strength was gone, and then she feebly crawled into the abused bed and slept like the dead. Chapter 23. Arity couldn't sleep. The wind seemed to grab hold of her windows and shake them with fury. Lightning flashed eerily through her chamber, followed closely by the rumbling boom of thunder. She didn't mind storms, actually found them soothing. It wasn't the gale that kept her awake with anxious excitement, but the knowledge that the hunters were inside the castle at that very moment. She slipped from bed and wrapped a dressing robe over her nightgown, sliding her feet into soft shoes. A peek out her door found quiet, empty halls, flames flickering from massive wall sconces. The princess walked the halls in silence, her arms crossed over her chest. It was a testament to her father's trust of the hunters that the halls weren't crawling with guards. She did see one when she rounded the corner to High Hall, a lad not much older than she was. He was leaning against a tapestry and straightened when he saw her.
"Princess," he said with a nod. "Everything all right?"
She nodded in return. "I can't sleep."
"Aye, the storm," he said.
His eyes flicked up and down the wide hallway to be sure Arity was safe, before he seemed to relax. "I think I'll visit the library." She walked on before he could respond. One of the doors to High Hall was ajar. As she neared the darkened room, she glanced back at the guard, who watched dutifully. Arity walked slowly, and just as she came to the doorway, a flash of lightning lit up the vast room within. Men were laid out on cots and floor bundles, snores resounding upward in mock harmony. But one man was sitting against the wall, his arms draped over bent knees, face shrouded in waves of brown hair. Their eyes met just as the lightning flashed, and their gazes remained connected afterward in the dim streak of sconce flame. Arity sucked in a breath as the thunder hit, shaking the castle. She could still feel Paxton's eyes as she continued forward, out of his sight. By the tides, how could a simple look make her tremble so? She glanced back at the guard, who was still watching, forcing her not to linger. Beyond the entrance to the great hall were steps down to the lower wing, the library to the right, and a training facility with Arity's silks and an indoor archery range to the left. She was still shaking a bit as she stepped lightly down and rounded the corner to the library. Then she heard the murmur of male voices behind her at High Hall and retreated back to the corner to listen.
"Aye, it's a nasty one," the young guard's voice reverberated down the stone hallway. "The archery range is down the steps to the left, if you're looking to pass time until the storm ends." "Very well, but my bow is in my tent."
It was Paxton's voice. Arity's heart skipped with glee. Had he followed her? The men were discussing the availability of practice bows when she peeked around the corner. Neither were looking her way. In a moment of spontaneity, Arity slipped behind the tapestry against the open wall and rushed past, running quietly the rest of the way to the training room. "Please follow me," she thought, and then nearly laughed. He wasn't the type to follow a lass like a lovesick pup. He was a mystery, that one, a mystery she planned to solve. But time alone with him was hard to obtain. Her nerves were alight, causing beads of sweat to break out across her skin when she heard his footsteps moving down the hall. "He's coming," she thought excitedly. Then her limbs prickled again with nervous anticipation, and she realized how foolish she appeared just standing there. She hurried to her silks and grabbed hold with slick palms, twisting her ankles sloppily and hoisting herself up with a bit too much force. She swung wild and high, jerking her head toward the doorway at the sound of a throat clearing. Her face flamed. Paxton's hair was disheveled. His dark eyes took in the sight of her swaying on the silks, and he turned to glance down the hall behind him before staring at her again.
"I was told that you would be at the library, and was ordered to keep my distance."
Arity unwound one foot and reached her toe down to the floor to stop her movement. She felt utterly stupid, realizing how she must look in her night robes, swinging away like a child, her hair loose and probably a tangled mess. I changed my mind. He didn't move away from the doorway. The two of them locked eyes and forged a sort of silent battle.
Like I said, he told her in a low voice, I was told to keep my distance. Do you always follow rules so well?
It came out like a challenge. She held the silks tightly to steady herself, one foot still wound in the fabric and the other on the floor.
Actually, no.
Without looking away from her, Paxton's foot kicked the wooden doorstop, and he walked forward, letting the door creak closed behind him.
I saw the tapestry move.
He knew she'd be here. He had followed her. Arity had never felt more nervous in her life as he made his slow approach. She wasn't accustomed to feeling this way, her body out of sorts, her thoughts scattered. She was glad to have the silks to cling to. Paxton took his time. Arity thought she should say something, perhaps a witty quip, but she was afraid she'd sound breathless. She didn't want him to know how he affected her. He walked a circle around her, moving nearer, his eyes scrutinizing every element in that curious way of his. Arity kept very still. No lad other than Harrison had dared to get this close. He stopped in front of her and looked skyward. His eyes trailed the silks to the ceiling, and he reached up, his fingers and palm wrapping around the smooth fabric, feeling his way down. When he got to her hand, he let go, never touching her.
I wonder, he said quietly.
His eyes roamed over her hair and face, her robe cinched at the waist. If he thought she looked silly, he didn't show it. You wondered what? She was horrified to hear that she indeed sounded as breathless as she was. Curses. Paxton's hand drifted over the hair at her shoulder, his fingers gathering a mass of light red strands and winding them gently about his palm, until her long tresses were a loose knot around his strong hand. She could feel the slight tug at her scalp as his fist slightly tightened. Her chest fluttered at the sight of his thumb running back and forth over the taut hair there. She suddenly wished she could feel that caress.
I wonder what sort of queen you'll be.
The seriousness in his eyes and meaning of his words ratcheted up Arity's spine, bringing her back to her senses in a heady rush. She let go of the silks and stood before him on her own 2 feet. Taking her cue that the mood had shifted, he let her hair slide from his hand. Why would he ask such a thing? Exactly what aspect of her personality made him question the type of ruler she'd be? Did he think her immature and incapable? Could she blame him after she'd acted so transparently foolish just now? Arity lifted her chin. I hope to be fair and just. His face bent a fraction closer, as if hungry for anything she might say.
To whom? He asked.
To whom? What sort of question is that?
To all, of course.
She realized her hands had gone to her hips, and she forced them back down to her sides. A rumble of distant thunder sounded. Paxton's impassioned eyes narrowed and bore into her. There was something desperately needy in his gaze, and Arity found herself wanting to fulfill that mysterious need. He opened his mouth to speak, just as sounds of footsteps echoed down the hall. Arity's eyes widened. Grab a bow, she whispered urgently. Look as if you're practicing. Paxton moved swiftly across the room, snatching a practice bow from the wall and facing a target. Arity grasped the silks and wound her feet quickly, climbing a few feet in the air. The door creaked open, and she looked to see one of the higher-ranking night guards standing there. His eyes rounded as he stepped into the room.
Princess Arity, are you?
His eyes moved to Paxton, and his whole demeanor hardened.
How dare you close yourself in a room with the princess hunter?
Paxton hung the bow back on the wall before turning.
I assure you, sir, Her Highness has not been compromised in any way. This is highly inappropriate.
The guard appeared enraged on her behalf. Arity quickly climbed down and moved forward. Mr. Seabolt has done nothing wrong. I invited him into practice.
Princess, with all due respect.
The guard lowered his voice.
The door was closed.
Was it? She said, feigning ignorance, waving a hand as if it were nothing. The jam must have come loose. I didn't even notice. The guard glanced at Paxton, scowling. The hunter's face remained void of guilt or regret. Look. Arity folded her hands in front of herself, and her voice took on a diplomatic tone. The hunter couldn't sleep. Neither could I.
I should have gone to the library and let him have this room, but I suppose I'm tired and not thinking straight. I know how this appears, but I assure you it was quite innocent. And now I'll be returning to my chambers. She gave a yawn for good measure, covering her mouth. The guard's face softened a fraction.
That's probably best, Your Highness. I shall accompany you.
She nearly told him not to bother, but a true wave of fatigue hit her and she nodded. The guard cast a pointed look at Paxton that seemed to say, "Get back where you belong." Paxton, face still blank, slid his gaze to Arity one last time. She could have sworn she saw gratitude in his eyes, mingling with amusement on his lips, before he moved to walk ahead of them from the room. Arity silently followed, watching Paxton's strong back and the strides of his long legs as he entered High Hall for the remainder of the night. When she climbed back into bed and stilled, her scalp felt sensitive with the memory of his gentle tug. What would he have said and done next if they hadn't been interrupted? Arity felt about a frustration rise. She was no closer to solving the mystery of Paxton Seabolt. In fact, his questioning words echoed through her mind long after the thunder ceased to roll. Catrin's mouth was set in a straight line of worry the next morning, as she carried Arity's freshly ironed dresses into the princess's chambers. Arity sat up in bed, groggy from tossing and turning after her late night encounter with Paxton.
"What's wrong?" she asked her maid.
Then her stomach clenched.
"Did the beast attack?"
"No, Your Highness,"
Catrin shook her head.
"It's the poor Zandali women. When a maid went to their chambers this morning, she found them all ill with fevers."
Arity leapt from the bed, grabbed her beaded shawl and threw it around her shoulders.
"I've got to tell Mrs. Rathbrook." "She's already been called,"
Catrin assured her.
"Good."
She relaxed a fraction.
"I want to check on them."
"Come, let me help you dress first, my lady,"
Catrin called, but Arity left her, hurrying to the guest quarters barefoot. She halted at the corner when she saw her mother standing there, conversing with a guard at the door. They both looked at her, from her nightgown down to her feet, and her mother's mouth pinched with displeasure. Arity took a deep breath and moved forward.
"Is anyone else sick?"
Arity asked, coming to a stop before them.
"No, thank the seas," the queen said. "The Lochlin hunters took the Zandali through a town yesterday, where they came in contact with commoners. We believe that is how they contracted the fever."
Arity ducked her head into the darkened room. Mrs. Rathbrook was working over Zandora, who lay still on the four-poster bed. She wiped her forehead gingerly and applied ointment to her lips. The other two huntresses were curled up on cots, shivering. Arity moved forward.
"You can't go in there, princess," warned the guard.
Arity felt a prickle of frustration. She closed her eyes and leaned her forehead against the doorframe. Pain pulsed in her chest. An awful, heavy feeling had taken up residence there over the past several weeks from stress. She looked into the room again, and Mrs. Rathbrook saw her. The woman bustled over.
"Don't worry yourself, princess. They're not so far gone that they can't be healed. Illnesses such as this are different from injuries, though. It takes more time to filter magic through the blood. They won't be happy with me, but I've given them sleeping draughts. If they try to rise without enough rest, the disease can return even stronger. I suggest they do not hunt tonight."
Arity nodded, and the woman went back into the darkened room. The queen gently pulled Arity's hair over her shoulder.
"She's right, dear girl. You shouldn't worry yourself. Now go back to your room and make yourself presentable."
Arity did as she was told. Her feet were cold and numb by the time she reached her bedchamber again. Catrin led her to the plush stall, setting to work on her hair. The princess stared out the window. The rain had finally stopped. Now a dense fog hung over the land and sea.
"I've been thinking, princess, about the Zandali. Are you truly all right with marrying the leader's brother if she slays the beast? A man you've never seen?"
"Nay, Catrin," Arity said with sadness. "But if one of the Zandali takes the beast, I have to."
"You'll go all the way to the desert?"
Arity shook her head.
"That is part of our deal. The brother will move here, but a portion of royal riches will be sent to his homeland."
Her stomach cramped at the idea of marriage.
"I'm sorry, miss."
Catrin placed her hands on Arity's shoulders.
"You've got enough on your mind without my prying questions. Come on, let's find you a pretty gown for the day."
Arity let her maid choose the dress, too tired to care. Chapter 24.
Paxton exited the castle with the other men into the foggy morning. When they turned toward the commons, he took the path straight toward the trade port, needing time to himself. He ended up down by the water on one of the older, empty docks at the end of the port that appeared abandoned. He could barely see 5 feet in front of himself through the mist. He sat on the end of the weathered wood. The water was 3 feet below him, splashing lightly against the pillars of the dock. To his right, through trees beyond, he knew there to be a private royal beach and docks along Lanark Creek, where Captain Gilfin was killed. On his other side were cargo ships and fishing boats. Past that would be the naval port with its vast vessels. He could hear men's voices in the distance, busy with their trades, carrying carts of bait and catch to and fro. He watched as time passed, and the sun made its way overhead, burning off a small bit of cloud cover. All he wanted was to lie back and sleep where he was. He felt the soft thumps of footsteps on the dock behind him and turned. The princess stopped mid-step when she caught his gaze and looked at him questioningly, as if for an invitation. Paxton's pulse set into a jog as he gave her a nod. In the mist behind her, a guard stood at the edge of the dock, allowing the princess to walk to Paxton, but not taking his eyes off them. Remembering his last interaction with Princess Arity caused a fire to light within him. He'd been out of line with what he'd asked her, but couldn't bring himself to regret it. Something about the princess made him bold. He was curious about her motives and about how she'd react to him, in all ways. He couldn't seem to help himself. Paxton turned toward her without standing.
I'm surprised your guard didn't follow you down the dock.
The royal guard's outline was visible through the fog, but he was too far away to hear their conversation. Arity gave him a small sigh.
I am as well.
A quiet lull passed as Arity fidgeted.
I came to see if you're feeling ill like the Zandali, after going through that town, she said, interrupting his thoughts.
The Zandali are ill? Paxton asked.
A breeze picked up, whipping her hair across her face, but she peeled it away, pushing it over her shoulder.
All three of them.
She let out a sigh.
Mrs. Rathbrook is healing them, but they won't be able to hunt tonight.
Bucking seas, Paxton muttered.
They were down to only the Askamanian and Lachlan hunters for tonight, with only a handful of Zorfinans left. Arity sat down right next to him at the edge of the dock, as if she were a regular girl in a cotton frock, and not the princess of the kingdom, in satin and scented oils of berries and coconut, likely imported from Kalor, or one of Lochlannach's distant islands. In truth, he was surprised to see her. He thought perhaps he'd finally scared her away. Apparently not. She wound her hair over her shoulder and twisted it to keep it from blowing. The fog was slowly drifting out to sea. As his hair slung down over his eyes, she reached out and pushed it away for him. He felt his whole body go stiff at the feel of her soft fingertips.
You could wear it back like Tiern, to keep it out of your face.
Would you like that?
Paxton asked.
For me to look more like Tiern.
Her cheeks reddened, but she didn't look away.
Nay, I meant, it might be easier for you.
Again, Paxton looked at the water. He shrugged.
I can't be asked to tie one of those bothersome leather strips.
Arity giggled, and he found himself grinning, just a bit.
You think that's funny? He asked.
I think it's funny that there's something you're not good at. It obviously irks you, though it's a small thing.
Tying a hair strip is hardly a valuable skill.
Here, I keep one in case it gets windy.
Arity reached into a hidden pocket in her skirt and pulled out a thin, soft-looking leather.
Let me.
She moved behind him on her knees, and Paxton held his breath. His mother and grandmother used to tie his hair back as a lad, but it had been years since anyone had cared for him in that basic way. Now, feeling her small, warm hands fingering through his hair and smoothing it back, brushing against his skin, a chill of gratification and desire rippled through him. His hair felt tight as she knotted the strip at his nape. He let himself enjoy it.
There, she said.
Her breath skated over his neck. She was close. Closer than she ought to be, just as he'd been last night. And it sent a thrill into his bloodstream. He could smell her on the breeze as she moved nearer to his ear and whispered,
What if I said I do want you to kill the beast, Paxton Seabolt? What if I want it to be you?
Each word punctured into his skin, tiny needles that would mark him forever. Did she know what she was saying? Did she know how it sent a deep thrill of satisfaction to his core? He slowly turned.
The princess sat back on her heels with her hands in her lap. Her eyes were filled with rebellion, nervousness, maybe even a touch of desperation. This future queen at his mercy. He knew enough about her now to know she had a good heart, despite the evils of her ancestry.